I've attended many a flea market in my day. Once a month on a Sunday in Pasadena, there would be the Rose Bowl flea market my mom, brother, and I frequented. Now, at first, I wasn't a big fan of it. There was always so much going on and scorchingly hot, and I wasn't that interested in antiques. My parents would find furniture or house decorations among the hundreds of stalls set up, and my brother found clothes or cool sunglasses. I often was just there, parroting around trying to find something of value. Until eventually, I found something that piqued my interest. I had been interested in doors and keys and that kind of mechanism for a long time. So it was only natural that the piles and piles of antique and vintage keys grabbed my attention. And that was when I started amassing keys for one purpose: to build a collection. Hello, and welcome to Jackie On, a podcast where I, Jackie, talk about my opinions on a bunch of different topics. This episode is Jackie On Collections. As I just mentioned, I do in fact have a key collection, and I like to wear keys on my neck or as earrings or something of that sort, and I often get asked why I have these keys, and my answer is almost always about the fact that I collect vintage and antique keys. And I truthfully think it started even before the flea market, during the time that my family and I traveled a lot when I was in third grade, and each family member was given a little project as we traveled. My brother's was to play soccer in every country we visited, and mine was to take pictures of doors. I know it's kind of interesting for a 7-year-old's job to be taking pictures of doors, and I knew it kind of had some connection with my key obsession, so it started pretty early. When we went to visit South Korea, I was even thrilled to go to the Key and Lock Museum there, so who really knows what was going on inside my head, but all I know was doors, keys, and locks were very fascinating to me for a very long time. But I was able to turn that into something of passion, into a collection. And otherwise, from a young age, I started a stuffed animal or plushie collection. This is just because I became too emotionally attached to all of them for me to get rid of a single one. So I feel that one is a little bit self-explanatory to a certain extent. I also have a pig collection. It's gotten big enough I've lost track of how many pig-related items I own, but I know it's an embarrassing amount. And after visiting the Bunny Museum in Altadena, California, my dad suggested calling it my pig museum, and that name has stuck ever since. And thus, I've been growing my pig museum with the idea of one day being able to display all of the items in some capacity. I do want to add that heartbreakingly, during the Eaton fires, the over 46,000 bunny items in the Bunny Museum were all burned down, save for about 20, which as someone who has a large amount of pig items, not that many, but still a good amount, as I can't even imagine what kind of heartbreak you go through to just save 20 items out of collections of items from a bunny museum that some of them were even 2,000 years old, outliving other fires, droughts, and change of ownership. And that's what kind of make this even sadder. So when I say I understand the need to collect, I really do. In my dorm in college, I have my key necklaces, way too many plushies, and pigs everywhere. So while I don't have my entire collection, I do understand that need to have something and to amass a system where you collect something that you really enjoy. And I don't just want to talk about the collections that I personally have, and instead go into why people collect and what consists of a collection before focusing on some of the cool collections I've come across throughout my research. But first, to get into some technicalities with what I see as a collection. Technically, there's no set number of items a person needs for it to count as a collection, and the way I think of it is gradual, unless inherited and then it's not your collection, but it's a collection. Basically, my collection of keys I got over time by visiting different stalls, spending years gathering and growing up into forming a collection. If I bought all of them at once, that's not really a collection since it took me no time to collect it. But if I bought a collection from someone else or my grandma decided to give me all of her keys she's collected over the years, then I have my grandma's collection or someone else's. I truly feel like part of the ownership one can take with a grouping of items is in the act of collecting it by yourself or with other people. I don't know very many people who academically try to define collections, but that's kind of the framework through I see it in. And really, I don't want to claim there is a best thing to collect or a best framework to use when collecting. Truthfully, the best collection is one that makes the collector feel good. To be clear, hoarding, though, is not the same as collecting. Hoarding often stems from a fear, a need to have everything and a lack of organization around it. Whereas collecting is more deliberate, organized, and stems from having prizes for the items you are amassing. Collecting can, in some cases, turn into hoarding. People who keep on going and going and do it more for a feeling than a passion can easily slip into a hoarding mindset. But I do want to draw a separation because I feel that hoarding is more of a lack of control, whereas collecting is more of a appreciation for the object as opposed to a fear from yourself. And I kind of want to go even further on this idea. There's a psychology of collecting things. It's not just like a, hey, let's go pick up some rocks and call it good. And really, this is because so many people collect. It's not like a minority of people in the world are just collecting a little bit, but actually a lot of people are. We all have little niche things we enjoy and we end up amassing them. I also want to be clear, I'm not going to be discussing art collectors because I feel like that requires a certain amount of money and is often done to resell or for curation. Or in general, I think art collecting is different because there's a prescribed value to art, right? Whereas I think for a lot of collectors, the value is the items themselves just existing. It's not necessarily in their resell value or like who made them. So I'm more talking about the ways that everyday people collect things for fun and for enjoyment. So it was actually found in a 2002 study that around 40% of US households engage in some form of collecting. And that's certainly a larger amount than I would have expected. This one paper, Exploring Consumer Collecting Behavior, a Conceptual Model and Research Agenda from 2018, was super interesting because it claims that collecting is paradoxically anti-materialistic. It's materialistic in the way someone purchases and obtains a physical item, but also in creating a collection, it's not to resell it or to gain. It derives from an absolute passion for the object, not to consume it, but to appreciate it. Overall, the act of collecting is by its very nature paradoxical. It's rational yet irrational, social yet solitary, consumerist and yet not. It's natural yet manufactured. Collecting might be one of the most human things out there because not only is it rooted in natural responses like how birds collect shiny things, but it goes beyond the way we have to interact within our social networks to achieve a collection. In today's day and age, collecting is contingent on other people. You can't just go outside and say, hey, I want to collect pigs and interact with no one to do that, because in order to collect that, you have to go to different merchants, you have to bargain with them, you have to figure out what you want. Some people who maybe collect rocks don't have that level of human interaction, but inevitably you'll have people getting curious about your collection and drawing them in. And so really it is an experience that is reliant on other people's interaction. I also want to mention that a lot of papers that talk about collecting don't just talk about physical objects. It can be experiences, ideas, and feelings. I really focus more on physical items as it's a lot easier to quantify a physical object you're collecting than an experience or a feeling. But the fact that 40% figure is likely underrepresenting the truth is fascinating because we can see people who are, let's say, fear junkies as collectors of fear. They want to have crazy experiences and crazy memories that they can collect and share with other people. And that kind of stems from potentially the same areas that collecting a physical item does. That is speculation on my behalf, but it's very interesting speculation to hold. There's another paper out there, though, that suggests collecting might not be so cool and fascinating. Neural Basis for Collecting Behavior in Humans in 2005 claims that collecting stems from brain damage. Okay, it's a bit more nuanced than that, but basically they observed 86 people and noticed that their collecting habits coincide with damage done to the medial prefrontal cortex. And while that sounds like dangerous and scary, like brain damage, it's really not that bad. This is the region of the brain that is also thought to correspond to schizophrenia, depression, OCD, ADHD, and autism. And this makes some sense as people with ADHD and autism often have special interests or hyperfixations that will lead them to collect the object of their desires. Another study has found a correlation between collecting and damage to the ventromedial prefrontal cortex, which is part of the brain that helps integrate information about the value, desirability, and consequence of actions. So it can connect collecting with nostalgia or a good feeling. And in all fairness, this doesn't mean people who collect things automatically have brain damage. These studies looked more towards pathologic collecting, and also slight damage in this area of the brain is not that rare, just based on the amount of people affected by these mental disorders in the world. It's just interesting that these habits are so widespread, but it's more like having some mental disorder leads to collecting rather than collecting leads to mental disorder. So if you like collecting things, it might be because you fall into one of these categories and not necessarily because you have some rare undiagnosed brain damage. And when I say brain damage, this is kind of like more the colloquial term that's been used by scientists and medical officers to describe some of the symptoms that people have when they do struggle with mental disorders. And I think really it goes back to the idea that a lot of people who do collect might, and especially like over collect, like have 4,000 plus items, 40,000 plus items that they have, it might have something to do with having a special interest or a hyperfixation. It's just more interesting that there's science that people have looked into collecting in terms of it being more of a neurodivergent response rather than something crazy out there. So I'm not claiming if you collect things you have brain damage. I don't think I have brain damage, but there could be some neurodivergency that exists, and that's perfectly okay. There could also not be. Again, these papers were from a little bit of time ago, still relevant today, but they also didn't have massive sample sizes. So it's more of an interesting thing than like something we should actually be afraid of. I just want to make that completely clear because I don't want anyone to be thinking, oh my God, I have brain damage because I like collecting things. That's not what these papers are talking about. There's just potential links between pathological collecting and neurodivergency, specifically with the regions of the brain that are connected. Otherwise, we've got the science of collecting out of the way. We've got some definitions out of the way. Now let's talk about some cool collections that exist out there in the world. Of course, we mentioned the Bunny Museum. Very sad what happened to it, but we hope it gets up and running and that the owners are able to recuperate. Next is the International Banana Museum in Mecca, California. They claim to have over 25,000 banana-related items, and they charged an admission of $1 last time I checked, which is really just iconic. However, they have since closed. I think it was in 2021 or 2023 they closed. Kind of the offset of the pandemic led them to close their doors, and I'm not sure they've opened since. Next is a man named Luigi Lineri, who became a collector of river stones from northern Italy, having categorized thousands of them in his home. There's some really cool black and white photos of him just sitting in a room with walls and walls of river stones in their own little boxes. It's like a museum, but for stones. It's quite fascinating. And then the next person we have is Demetrius Pistiolis, who has the largest private collection of movie cameras in the world. He has around 937, and as a retired postman, he keeps his cameras all in his basement, which is a popular theme you'll see is people often either have them on display or they're in someone's basement, their collections, because there's not much room for them elsewhere. Next I want to talk about is Ron Broomfield, who collected 1,800 garden gnomes. That was his obsession. Sadly, he died about 10 years ago, but a fact that I learned from an article I read is that he was actually cremated in his favorite gnome costume, and he liked to donate a lot to charity. So a lot of his gnome items were auctioned off with the proceeds going to charity, which I think is kind of a beautiful thing in the long run. Next, I want to talk about Michelle Jack Hossule, I believe, who has been collecting wines for in years in his cellar in Western France. He has 40,000 bottles, many of them being top premier wines. But what's really, really crazy about this man is that in 2014, there were a couple of robbers who kidnapped him to get the key to his cellar. They threatened to cut his fingers off. Some accounts say they like tortured him and only left when he told them that the key was kept at the bank. They stole some things as they went, but otherwise, that's just such a crazy story that this man's wine cellar was so renowned for having these very expensive wines that he bought when they were not quite so expensive, and they went that far to try to get them. I do think these men were all found and tried, but it's just a crazy story. And otherwise, though, there's a lot of mixed opinions about this man, only because some are thinking it's such a shame that he's kept these wine bottles in his basement. And his response to this is basically that, well, he drinks them. But I think it's very interesting that people are saying his private collection should not be so private. And he doesn't want to take visitors because he says that they don't want to leave, which I think is completely understandable. If I had people not want to leave, I might not want visitors anymore either. Next person I want to talk about, though, is Lori Brokenshire, who just had the most bizarre life in a good way. He was part of the Royal Navy, a semi-professional magician, and helped foster over 70 children throughout his lifetime with his wife. In addition, he swam the English Channel. His son later did the same, which gave them an award as being one of the few father-son duos who have done it. And he also had a massive collection of puzzles and brain teasers. He loved puzzles so much, he even found a third unique solution to, at the time, what was the Dudeney-Lloyd problem, which was basically a checkerboard dissection puzzle rumored to only have one unique solution per the inventor Henry Dudeney, what he claimed. Later, Sam Lloyd ended up finding a second unique solution, and then Brokenshire did himself, leading it to become the Dudeney-Lloyd-Brokenshire problem. Now that it's existed for some time, it's considered that instead of there being one unique solution, there are three definitively, and people don't think there's any more than that, that there's just three unique solutions. But it's really incredible that he was able to find one, and the fact that he had such a massive puzzle and brain teaser collection that him and his wife ended up having to add on to their house just to fit it all is incredible. Anyway, that's another legend. As you can tell, some of these people who have collections are just crazy, in a good way, but crazy. And the last person I'm going to mention is Yvette Dardine, who is a buxidopherophile. Yeah, I didn't know what that word meant earlier until just now, but it's just a collector of tin cans. In fact, she actually amassed 60,000 throughout her life, and her collection is in the Museum of Lithographs Tin Cans in Belgium on display. I think it's more private tours you have to book, but very fascinating that she too has a museum since she just has so many tin cans that she's found. But really, what I want to share with these collections, I know I moved through them pretty quickly, but the goal was kind of to show you that anyone can collect anything. It just really stems from a place of passion. These people all loved so much what they collected, and that's why they were able to amass so much. And there's even more people out there. Some of them are a little strange, some of them are a little questionable, but for the most part, it all stems from a place of passion and joy, and I think that's really what collecting is all about. So if you have a collection at home, and you're thinking about, you know, how relevant it is in your life, or if you even need a collection, just think about the fact that it stems from a place of love and joy, and that's something that, in this world, we should appreciate. And that collections, by their very nature, are paradoxical. So if you don't know if you should keep one or get rid of them, it's okay. That's kind of the nature of a collection. It's there, and it's difficult to know what to do with it, but at the end of the day, it brings you joy, and that's what matters. Thank you for tuning into this episode of Jackie On. I'll see you in the next one.